Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to a very special episode of the TT Podcast. Tom and I are delighted to be joined by a World Tour rider, Tour de Yorkshire stage winner, and a master in the art of time trialing. Harry Tanfield, welcome to the TT Podcast. How are you?
Thanks. Got a nice rest day today. Just been doing a bit of Christmas shopping at the market and catching one few emails. Quite a few team emails and planning things like that to sort out on the rest of it. Done some hoovering. I don't know how the day's gone, really.
Where are you joining us from?
I'm in Javier in Spain.
Lovely. And I imagine you're preparing for your third year on the World Tour.
Yeah. Yeah, just training away. First rest day. So I've had been out here for 4 or 5 days now.
It's nice out there, is it? Because I'm in the northeast at the moment, which obviously you know well, and it is freezing.
Is it? Yeah. When I left, I think the week before I left, it was like, wasn't getting above 8 degrees for the foreseeable, until, I don't know, as long as BBC were on the app was showing, it wasn't going higher than 10 degrees, so, and raining all the time.
So I was glad I'd be straight off to Spain if I could be.
Yeah.
it's the wind that gets you, I find.
Yeah, I've had that quite a bit back at home. But then it's been weird. It's been super windy here, like more than England. When it does get windy here, it's been like the other day it was 45 kilometers an hour, like constantly. Really, really, not nice.
But so
hot, so I don't really care. I mean, it's not raining. So.
Yeah. So what is it that you're actually doing out there? Obviously, like riding a bike, but is it?
Yeah, pretty much every day, between 3.5 and 5, 6 hours. It's amazing how fast the day goes by the time you get up, and sometimes do a bit of stretching or a bit of core in the morning, and then breakfast, get out, come back, eat, shower, and then normally literally have like somewhere between 1 and 2 hours by the time I've had something to eat, sat down, and then I'm up cooking dinner, and then normally get
and the like going out to Spain, was that just your idea, something that you've done personally, or is it obviously
it's something I'd normally be on a team camp with the team actually in December. Pretty much the last few years I've always been on a camp, but I've always done it as well around the uni schedule, as soon as I broke up from uni I would always come straight to here, somewhere in this area up until Christmas, normally fly back literally like the day before Christmas or the 23rd or something like that, just to make the most of it while I was off term. So I've kind of just stuck with that planning, really. And I've got a friend who's got an apartment out here until April, so just hop on a plane, just get out. You got to do all the tests and the COVID tests and stuff, so keep it safe.
Yeah, familiar with that.
You were saying that you'd usually be on a team camp. I imagine at the moment you're probably quite relieved. Maybe that's the right word, but it looks to have been quite a frantic last couple of weeks for you in terms of contract negotiations.
Everything came late, so that's why I keep getting lots of team emails now, just to to sort things out, basically. Bikes, kit, equipment, various things, addresses, ID documents, and everything's still getting finalized. It's just takes a bit of time to sort out, but I think we've got some provisional dates for a camp, the 20th to the 30th, I think, January.
Do you know where you're going?
Spain. It's not decided yet.
I was going to say, hopefully it'll be South Africa.
Well, some of them say in Girona, but I doubt it's Girona, not in January. I think it'll just be down here, where I am now. So I'll probably just drive over in the car.
It'll
be a lot easier. So I'm going to come out to here in the New Year. So it's a lot nicer to be able to just drive to the, drive myself up there or get picked up by the team or something like that.
You could do what Tim Wellens and Thomas De Gendt do and cycle there.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah, I don't know what bike I'm going to be on, because I'm probably going to pick up a new bike anyway, so...
Your new team, Quebec Rassos, they're on BMCs this year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But everything's a bit late getting sorted, so just kind of waiting on it at the moment. Hopefully they can maybe get one built up before Christmas and send out, because obviously my other team bike needs to go back at the end of the month, so time's kind of running out at the moment.
I see. So with the new contract, obviously you signed for Ribble World type thinking that you were going to be in a continental team. Was the Quebec Erasmus contract always on the cards? Or was that something that came about really last minute?
No, it came about pretty last minute, really. I've been speaking to them before and they were kind of just, they were waiting on a lot of people, I guess, as well. And with the whole thing, that I've been speaking to them for a long time as well, from before the World. And obviously, I was free to leave early point for a high level team anyway, so I kind of just thought, like, well, they were putting pressure on me to sign up because they wanted to complete the team and get things sorted, and I wasn't going to lose anything by joining the team. A decent setup and good calendar for a county team, so I thought, well, it's better than nothing, you know, because if I end up with nothing,
you've got nothing.
You could potentially have that. Yeah. So, exactly. So it was always a good fallback option, and I'm very lucky that I got this opportunity.
You mentioned the Vuelta a España. That was obviously your first Grand Tour that you competed in last month. How was that for you? Bit of a baptism of fire?
Yeah, a little bit. I found out pretty much 7-10 days before doing it.
So really? That short notice?
Yeah. It was literally, I think it was 10, maybe 10 or 12 days or something. I don't know. I just got off by the next day and came to Spain to go training. So just to be out here, you know, to prepare in the heat, you know, a bit of heat training as well, and in the south, and, you know, doing some big miles and things like that, rather than being in England, where I was going to be riding Roubaix. And then obviously I decided to ride the Vuelta, and then, you know, Roubaix got cancelled 2 or 3 days later.
Oh, so that's what you were originally down to do, Roubaix?
Yeah, that was a plan, yeah. So it was going to be, you know, one or the other kind of thing.
Yeah,
well, I didn't know it
worked out quite well.
Yeah, it did work out well. I knew I was planning on doing Roubaix, obviously, and then the opportunity came up for that. So I decided to change the plan and go with that.
Because I have to say, like, we talked about it here before the Vuelta started, and I think I was a bit like you. I know you've said that you didn't really know much about the Angliru and things like that before you went to the Vuelta. And I think I was similar because I always thought the big climbs in Spain were the Pyrenees or in the south of Spain. Yeah. And then there's just this wall of mountains on that northern coast.
In the Basque, yeah. Part of Spain I've never visited. I've never been to the part of
it. It looked pretty brutal.
Yeah, it was. Everywhere there was, you know, you could climb up to 1,000 metres, 1,200, 1,800 metres even, I think, some places went. It was really mountainous. Like, it wasn't, you think you need to go to the Pyrenees to get that, but you don't, no, it's all around that region.
And I imagine it's very hard riding at kind of 20% gradients over 2-3 kilometres. I imagine it's a lot harder when you have one leg like you did on the Angliru.
Yeah, it was pretty hard that with, I had a bit of a torn muscle from the day before. I think the whole of that week was pretty, you know, the back end of that week was bad. And luckily it went away after that. After Angliru, we had the day off and got a chance to let it recover a little bit. But yeah, it was horrible. Just couldn't push down with it. Just, bad enough trying to get up the climb anyway, but like my legs were fine. It was just the muscle, you know, just trying to ride with the torn muscle. It's never very nice.
Well, that's what I know you said to ITV, didn't you, that you'd stop for a comfort break and tried to stretch it out on the way up as well.
Yeah. Just trying to massage it out a little bit and I had a chance to have a pee, which was good.
Yeah.
It was pretty bursting. No, because it was on a category climb, there was quite a big time cut. So, you know, we got to the bottom of the climb in a decent group and it was all right.
I love that idea of like, the pressure of the time cut, last person in, and you're there stopping at the side of the road to take a pee.
Yeah.
You're like,
I was thinking like, we've got like 15 minutes here. And then I started riding again and then realized we had like 3Ks, two and a bit Ks or something, but actually it was ridiculously steep. So the 2Ks does take quite a long time to do.
Are you doing the maths as you go up, or do you just have the
team
car and the radio telling you where you are?
Yeah, both really. Obviously, I found out, you know, as soon as the first rider finished, then that was when I knew what we had and what, you know, how long it was going to take to get up there. And I think that when they finished, I think we were probably at like, you know, 5 or 6 Ks to go or something like that. And then we had like a 45-minute time cut for like 6Ks.
So that doesn't sound too bad, but then as you say, it is the steepest climb anyone's ever really seen.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously didn't want to, you know, go too, I mean, you can't go too slow but anyway. I mean, we literally couldn't have gone much slower than what we did. So it was, yeah, it was all right.
So a lot of weaving.
Yeah, there was, yeah.
How much of it were you riding by yourself?
Oh, none of it. We were just, when I stopped for a pee, just to ride back on to get back with the group. The rest of the time was with Bennett and Markov and another sprinter from Lotto and Taj. And some Spanish guys too. Yeah, so we had a good little group. We were just tapping up, weaving about on the road pretty much.
I wanted to ask you as well what it was like, obviously, riding for AG2R, a French team, or that team that went to the Vuelta. There were six Frenchmen, Matthias Frank, who's Swiss, and yourself. I mean, it must be difficult riding a Grand Tour, riding your first Grand Tour, but having the extra kind of language, not a language barrier. Was there a language barrier? Did that make it kind of more difficult?
No, all the guys speak full English. You know, they all speak fluent English pretty much on the team. Obviously, we lost a few guys early on with crashes and illness and all that kind of thing. So, no, it was a really nice race. We had a good group of guys and we were all working well together.
And they don't make you get the GCSE textbooks out again just to pick up some French.
And I do. I was carrying my vocab book, my GCSE vocab book.
Yeah.
I carried that around in my rucksack the whole year. That was pretty handy. My little orange vocab book from year 9, year 10. So, that was when I stopped doing French because, GCSE. So I rediscovered all that this year, pretty much.
Did you pick up any good terms? Anything that you're able to share on a family podcast?
No, to be quite honest, I've pushed it all out of my head now. The thing is, like, you need to be back in the environment. When you're in the environment, you think in French and you're speaking, but you're also thinking it, which is different. And then now I've just completely out of the environment since I come back. I just haven't, you know, since I left the Vuelta, I was it. I never spoke a word of English.
Yeah, I get that completely because I think we both do a bit of French, and like, unless you're in France and immersed in it, it does disappear quite quickly.
Yeah. Yeah, like just the most basic things. I mean, I'm sure it would all come back, but, you know, just with what's going on and the stress and, you know, trying to organise things and sort myself out with teams and just everything else going on, it's just, I haven't even given it a thought. You know, obviously the language of the team next year is English.
Will be English, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many different nationalities. It's, it'd be similar to Katusha, I guess.
As well, am I right in thinking you're the only Brit on the Quebec Rassos team as well?
That's right, yeah.
There's not. What do you think about the kind of scene of British cycling at the moment? I mean, Theo Gegenhardt's just won the Giro, but otherwise, it's not kind of the dominance that we saw in like the early 2010s.
Yeah, I guess so. I think give it a few years, it'd be, you know, stronger as well. I think there's a lot of young guys in the 23s. Juniors coming through as well, but that can rival as well. So I just think he just needs a little bit more time.
Mm-hmm. But I think certainly from what I'm seeing as well, I mean, a lot of the races where these juniors have the chance to excel, like, I mean, obviously you did in 2018 on the Tour de Yorkshire, are cancelled next year or haven't taken place this year. So they don't have that stage to kind of showcase themselves.
Yeah. And I don't know about Tour of Britain as well. I mean, that might not happen either. So it's a bit of a kick in the teeth for the Conti guys. But it's just a shame, about Yorkshire can't happen. Maybe in the following years it can. And I hope Tour of Britain gets saved for this coming year. But it's not great. There's very, very limited UCI racing. I mean, I'm talking about guys that are riding on Seiko, riding on the continent in European teams or, European teams or Conti European teams. They're the guys that more likely to get picked up or to progress more than what people are that are racing in the UK scene, I would imagine. But the UK Conti scene, although we don't have those two races, they can still compete across Europe. And if they're good enough, then I think that people still get noticed.
Of course.
At the Conti level wise.
And so do you think it was that first stage into Doncaster at the Tour of Yorkshire a couple of years ago, was that a big sort of career ending? Because I think that's, I obviously, we've been put in touch because we've got some mutual friends or acquaintances, and they always knew I liked cycling, and they said, Harry Tanfield, home roads, first stage of the Tour de Yorkshire, he's going to win this, and you did.
Fair one. No, to be honest, I was more shocked than anyone else as well. But yeah, obviously it just worked out on that day. You know, took the opportunity and took it.
How familiar were you with the roads into Doncaster? Do you think that gives you a big advantage?
I mean, I know Doncaster city centre a little bit, but
yeah.
I don't know that.
But it wasn't like you've done loads of training rides around there in the...
No. It's miles away. No. Just look in the road book the day before. Right, the days where it goes around my area is always like Scarborough or the Moors or somewhere like that, which is normally like a super hard stage. Sometimes it's a sprint finish, but normally it's a really hard stage or something like that.
So I went riding with my family in Yorkshire this summer, just gone. And I did a climb, which I believe you've done before in the Tour de Yorkshire, which is up Park Rash. Do you remember Park Rash?
Oh, yeah. I've ridden up there a few times.
I fell off my bike because it was so steep. I didn't have the gear set and I literally couldn't turn the cranks. And the road is gravel as well going up there. So if you can't turn.
Yeah, if you're on the edge of the road, you're pretty done for. I remember that was on one of the Queen stages. That was 2018, we went up there. And then again in 2019, we went up there. And I remember getting dropped in 2018 and I was on my own up there. I was like dying going up the climb. And then 2019 was a lot better. And I had like better gearing with the SRAM 12 speed. And yeah, it made it so much easier. I think I was probably like 3 kilos less as well, which probably helped quite a bit as well.
It's an inhumane climb, that. It's
it's nasty. Yeah, it's absolutely horrible. Disgusting. I would never, ever want to... Yeah, even on a training ride, it's just... It's not even like you can go and do an interval of it. It's horrible. I prefer Loft House.
There's some classic ones around, like Fleet Moss as well was a massive one.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
So the Butter Tubs, but the Butter Tubs did...
Butter Tubs was the big one in the Tour stage, wasn't it? That was just lined with people.
Yeah, Butter Tubs, I've done that one before. Not recently, but again, that's the Yorkshire Dales over that side, Reith and Richmond and stuff. That's, if I do a big 5-6 hour day, then we can go and do a couple of those climbs, I know, or other, but it's a pretty big day out to go and do those ones.
Well, this is all light work for someone that's been up the Angler route now, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, yeah, that Park Rash was like, it's, the Angler is like literally the same as that Park Rash is, you know, the steep bit. But instead of it being 200 metres, it's what, 1.5K? Maybe more.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like that. It's just like that steep bit, but just like 5 to 10 times, 5 or 8 times longer.
Right. Well, bear in mind, I fell off pretty imminently onto getting to the steep bit. So I'm not sure. I don't think they make gear sets the right size that I would need for the Angler, to be honest.
I mean, I did that Angler on, I think I had 36, 34. So, yeah. So you probably had like a 34, 28 or a 36, 30 maybe or something.
It wasn't enough. I'll tell you now, it wasn't enough. No. That's my excuse. No. I blame the gear set, not my legs.
Not the engine.
a good workman always blames his tools, is what they say.
Yeah. No, I'm glad I put that cassette on that I did. Otherwise, I would have really struggled, especially with my, torn muscle as well. Even it was still horrendous with that. So God knows, I mean, Bennett had like a 39, 30, maybe a 32 or something. And he was like literally just doing a gym session. His cadence was supposed to be around 20 RPM, 30 RPM. Just out of the saddle, just hauling himself up for like 30 minutes out of the chair.
That's nasty.
Yeah, it looked grim, yeah.
I wanted to ask you, obviously mentioned that Paris-Roubaix was on your schedule last year. I don't know if you've had a chance to sit down with your new directors this year and talk about kind of your targets for next year or what your calendar's going to look like.
Nothing, not a sausage. I mean, I spoke to the director about a week ago for the first time. And there's not a lot to talk about so far because people don't know about the race program when it's starting and stuff. But it's kind of taking it that the initial races that are on in the classics are going to be on. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we haven't spoken to the director about that. I had a coaching introduction on Zoom last night with the coaches of the team and stuff. So getting to meet my coach, who's Ashley English, who works for the team. So, I'm going to speak to him in the next coming days and get to know more about him, and he's going to be on my training peaks and stuff. So I think it's
Is there anything that you want to do?
I'd quite like to do the UAE tour and the Dubai tour and the Saudi tour and all other races that are in February. I think they'd be a nice start with the sprinting going on there and stuff. I think it'd be a good lead out in that for Max or Nizzolo or someone like that, you know.
You get the sun.
Yeah, yeah, a bit of sun.
I mean, obviously, your career so far has kind of been in service of the rest of your team. Do you see yourself kind of, you know, leading out the Velodrome on Roubaix? Or is that another few years?
Yeah, I'd have to go to the Roubaix Velodrome first in that front group. I don't know. I'd like to see how I'd like to do those races in Saudi Tour in the UAE and stuff like that. I can do some good lead outs there for the sprinters. And then, you know, that's the problem. I've still got to show that I'm a good rider for the team. I can't just do my own thing. It doesn't work like that. I've got to show that I can add value in the team in positioning and a good lead out for the sprinters of the team. And hopefully, you know, that can keep me in the team as well.
Before we let you go and, you know, obviously do your team commitments, I have a question that I've been burning to ask you. Something that's become a bit of a running theme on this podcast is my obsession with brown bib shorts. Now that you are no longer contractually obliged to say that you love them for the sponsors, where do you stand on brown bib shorts? Do you see it as an honor to have worn that iconic garment, or are you glad to be moving on to, I imagine, something a bit more traditional?
Well, I'm contractually obliged to say that they're very nice up until January 1st, at least.
Okay. So you're with me on this one then. That's good.
I do actually like them. I like the kit. Obviously, when I was thinking about joining the team of the year, all I could think of was brown bib shorts and round tube bike. But as I've worn the kit, and the moment that I was there with the team from December, November, whatever, seeing the kit and having it, I've loved it. Like, it works really well. I think it looks nice. The kit's really good. Rosti, they make fantastic kit. Fits real nice. And obviously everything's bespoke, custom fitted, so it's going to fit nice. I don't really have a preference. I think the kit design, I think it works very well with the kit. I mean, obviously other colours would work, but I think it works really well with the kit.
No, I couldn't agree more. your progression, your bib shorts, you've got quite the collection of bib shorts now. You had the red at Katusha, the brown at AG2R. You should need to Quebecca to go for like a neon green or something.
Yeah, I know. It's not been released yet, the kit design. I do want to know what the kit design is, though, because I want to get a new strap for my whoop, and I'm going to get a new one in the team colours. So, but obviously, there's been no release of the team kit yet, so can't buy one yet. I don't know when it's going to come out either. I think they're still finalising sponsors, so it could be a while. But then the kit's meant to be getting produced by ASOS, actually, right now. So maybe they're doing another kit design.
We'll find out maybe in the coming weeks.
I guess so, yeah. Maybe in a week there'll be a kit design getting released. But yeah, I think that whoever designs the kits, obviously they look at the whole package, don't they? So obviously if you're wearing brown shorts and just like normal kit, then it probably doesn't look very good. But I think with the full package, you know. See what it looks like.
I need to change my Christmas list for the full package then.
Yeah, you need a full outfit. I've still kept all my the full tights as well. So obviously I got brown leg ones, brown arm ones and stuff. Oh. Blue ones.
Unbelievable.
You've just made his day.
So I got some brown arm ones, yeah. They're the thin ones. It's the same material as the shorts, so I sometimes wear them if it's summery, or if it's, we have a thicker arm warmer, which is a blue one, like a light blue. I think the kit looks better with them, although there's a bit too much brown. And we have like a brown school cap, and we have lots of brown overshoes.
There's a limit with the brown, isn't there?
Which is a good colour for an overshoe. You know, winter overshoes being brown is a good idea. Brown bib tights, obviously knee warmers, leg warmers all brown. No brown socks, although the white socks do turn brown after about 3 weeks.
They need to get into cyclocross. It would be like camouflage, yeah, if they did cyclocross.
Yeah, they're pretty, they got pretty brown straight away.
Well, Harry, thank you so much for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you.
No worries. No.
Yeah.
It's cool. That's true.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll go on. Team Zoom now anyway at 6:30, so I'll keep Zoom on.
We look forward to following your season, and all the best. We'll be rooting for you.
No worries, thanks. Hopefully find out in January anyway what the crack is. So
Awesome.
See you later, guys.
Harry, thanks very much. Cheers. See you later.